It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee, Andy, Lori, and Alex, they're all here. We've got lots to talk about, including the Mac Pro Teardown. Yes, you can use it as a cheese grater, but don't. Why the blind smartphone camera tests produced the wrong results, and Apple makes $4 billion on a product you might not expect every single quarter. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 692, recorded Tuesday, December 17th, 2019. The digital Sputnik Voyager. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Tailor Store. Tailor Store makes high-quality dress shirts that are fully customizable by you. From the basic essentials to the most high-end details, Tailor Store has you covered. Go to taylorstore.com/twit and use the code TWIT to get up to 50% off your first dress shirt. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together with our favorite Mac friends and talk all about Apple. Rene Ritchie's here from the frozen north, beautiful Montreal. He is at iMore.com. He also is the host of the Vector podcast at iMore.com.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Mr. Rene Ritchie.
I got some snazzy new Alex Lindsay-style cyber lights behind me, so I'm just trying them out.
You know,
they look great.
I did some Hue shopping last night. I couldn't pull the trigger because I ended up putting more than $2,000 worth of Hue lights in my shopping cart. But I just
these are digital Sputnik Voyagers, and they can actually animate. I don't know how to do that yet, but you can scan in a photo and they'll animate to sort of match the photo. It's
wild,
bizarre.
Yeah, I want to get the ones that synchronize to your video so that you while you're watching TV stuff.
Once.
I did that.
Yeah, and?
I wrote a little thing.
You don't need to anymore. It does it automatically.
It would analyze. It would take the average hue of the the pixels.
You did it by hand.
Like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested to see how they do it. The problem that I had is that I didn't even it out enough, and it literally almost gave – I don't even get epileptic seizures from flickering, but it turned out that it changed a lot. And if you're watching something like Indiana Jones, it made me so stressed I couldn't continue.
Dissolve. It was like dissolve. That's Alex Lindsay, the Pixel Core Alex Lindsay on the Twitter. He is our video guru. Although it's Renee, surprisingly, who said he would have bought the XDR if it were available today.
I like things to settle.
Did you get a Pro, Renee?
No, I did not get a Pro, sadly.
What's the brand name of those lights?
Oh, this Digital Sputnik Voyager.
That doesn't seem like that's a real thing. That's Lori Gill giggling at us from iMore.com.
That's just not a real thing. He's just living in a sci-fi world.
It doesn't sound like... Why would you name lights Digital...
The company is Digital Sputnik. This particular light is Voyager. I heard they were used in The Mandalorian, and that is all I needed to know.
Oh, that was it. You had me at Mandalorian. Also with us from Boston... Mr. WGBH Boston. No, WBR. Where is it? BUR or
WGBH? We are a two public radio station town here in Boston.
Aren't you lucky? Andy Iannotco.
Hey ho.
Radio's Andy Iannotco.
Again, Renee has a YouTube channel with 150,000 followers and extremely good high production value. I am just making that leap into terrestrial radio at this point in my career.
No, that's good. That's good. Radio is coming back, my friend.
Exactly.
Is it?
The original streaming audio.
It is. So the Mac Pro teardown is on iFixit. Wow, I'm surprised they spent the money. You don't really need to tear down a Mac Pro, do you? I mean, it just kind of...
It's pre-torn.
Yeah. but one thing we did learn from this, at least, and I probably knew it before, was you don't have to buy the expensive Apple DDR4 EEC RAM. You can buy your own for considerably less. Would you consider that, Renee? Oh, look, they grated cheese with it. This is not a good idea.
What kind of cheese? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, but how much fun that
looks,
must have been.
I would say it looks like cheddar.
This is why there's going to be a class revolution in this country. You spend all your money on these computers and, let's grate cheese with it. Well, how about you give that cheese to someone who needs food?
I think that it actually would have done a pretty good job on Parmesan.
By the way.
No, you need five-dimensional cheese. That's clearly a five-dimensional grater.
I think this is the video we've all been waiting for.
There, this is looks like a cheap Wisconsin cheddar.
Yeah, and they needed something a little cutting cheese harder,
with a, huh? With a what was it? A palm tree? A palm tree. They were cutting cheese, so this is.
I don't think you could say it doesn't grate cheese. The problem is it doesn't deposit the grated cheese where you want it.
Yeah,
it keeps it in the hole. This is just a terrible thing to do to a Mac Pro.
Also, you can't return it now. I hope they realize that if they tried to, if that was their scam.
And I'd like to confirm that it was cheddar.
It is, yeah. It is a beautiful orange cheddar. You know, cheese is not naturally orange. Just want to tell you that, folks. Yeah. they used it as a pretext to recommend their halberd spudger at $2.99 for cleaning the cheese out of the holes.
Just in case you want to try that at home.
I should mention iFixit is a sponsor. We use the halberd spudger here all the time, and I highly recommend it. What else did we find out? I mean, it's like you can't really say it's a teardown. Everything has buttons.
Yeah.
There's nothing glued in as it should be. Did we learn anything else you learned in here? Would you, Renee, recommend getting cheap RAM or getting the Apple RAM?
I think it really depends on what you want to do with it. Again, like there's a bunch of my friends are all buying Mac Pros right now. With the kind of work that they could do is very easily doable on an iMac Pro, even a MacBook Pro. And for them, saving the money on the memory is, you know, fine.
That's
it's
not,
great.
Not what they're doing.
But for some people who are buying this, they're not paying for it. Their studio's paying for it. Their clients are paying for it. You know, they have $85,000 cameras, $200,000 cameras, everything. Their lights are $100,000. And just buying this and having like buying 10 of them, having them shipped from Apple, they're just going to take the package deal. So I think like for real, not I don't want to call them real, for the kind of person that Apple built this for, they were probably just going to buy it from Apple or they're going to buy in bulk from someone. I think for other people, save every penny you can if it's just an aspirational purchase.
Popular Mechanics had an article on the fans. The thermodynamics behind the Mac Pro, the hypercar of computers. This is actually something Apple's been talking about for a while, but they designed these fans. They were actually influenced by, they interviewed Chris Lichtenberg, who is a senior director of product design. He is also a pilot, flies a Beechcraft Turbo Bonanza. He said they couldn't use off-the-shelf fans. They would be too loud. So they're randomizing the blades, the blade pass frequency, so you don't get harmonics. In other words, you don't want the fans to kind of start all humming the same tune, mm-hmm. or even if they're slightly off, you'd get pulsing and sort of weird things. So they also said they were influenced by auto design with the fans. So just one more little tidbit on this desirable vehicle that you'll never probably drive. I know I won't.
Yeah. They really want to sell the point that there is nothing about this that isn't well. There's nothing off the shelf about this. There's nothing they haven't pre-considered. There's nothing they haven't tested the hell out of. Hopefully that concept will land, but they have to justify how many thousands or tens of thousands of dollars this thing costs.
Vincent Laforette, who is the aerial photographer, I've had him on Triangulation. Really like him.
He's so good.
Wonderful photographer. Also got his Mac Pro. I think he also got an Apple loaner, but unlike the YouTube stars, he didn't get something out right away. He actually used it for a while and wrote a very thoughtful article, even Mac Pro configuration recommendations. He shoots a lot of video in ProRes, and he was talking about things like he got a request for some video he'd shot in 8K. A client wanted it. He was able to render it overnight in 4444. And he said that was just dramatic improvement in his ability to render.
Did you see Justine's tweet over the weekend?
I did. Do you want to show that? Let me show that.
I sent some photos to Justine. Said, let's throw these into a Mac Pro to see how they go.
Oh, because she was rendering her 8K video. She had three 8K reds, right?
But yeah, she was running some 8K video. But in addition to that, there was I got her doing some photogrammetry on that computer.
Oh, did you? Oh, I didn't see those tweets.
Let me see. If you just got to look at
the beauty that is the CPU usage.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. So well, I thought video. This was her own videos that she was doing.
She was doing her own videos, but if you see those pictures over there, that's photogrammetry. That's Metashape over there.
While she's doing this rendering, she's also doing photogrammetry?
Yeah, which is why.
Oh, my God. That's how you get 64 that's how you get cores
all
used.
Those, or all 56 cores are being utilized, and then in certain operations, it crushed the GPUs as well.
That's amazing.
It's fun.
What's funny is the rendering is one frame per multiple seconds, so it's not rendering super fast. But I guess
that's the kind of stuff you want this for. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that an iMac Pro or a MacBook Pro can do. There's some things that you want those 56 cores.
What is photogrammetry? What is she doing there?
So the photogrammetry is I sent down about 140 photos of a square that I shot in India. And so what it does is it reverse engineers. First, it looks at points in the scene and says, okay, these all look unique. It might have 100,000 points per picture. Then it connects those points. It ties those points to other pictures. As this point is the same one as this one over here, and it ties literally tens of thousands of points together. It says, I think that these are all the same, and then it looks at them and it says, okay, if all those points are what I think they are, this is where all the cameras were that shot them. Once it knows where all the cameras are, it creates a depth map. Then it drops points, and then it builds models.
So it's literally CPU intensive.
The scene that I sent her at the settings that I sent would take my home computer about 4 days.
What did she calculate? This is the program.
I have to get back to her and find out what the final was, but yeah. I think that she was. I mean, it was literally. I think it was 8 to 10 times faster.
Yeah.
So it was.
What program is she using to do this?
That's called Metashape.
Metashape. And what is she using to edit? Is it Final? It must be Final Cut because you really.
She's using Final Cut.
You wouldn't want to use anything but Final Cut,
well, especially out of the gate. It's going to be optimized because you know that those two teams are probably talking to each other.
Yeah. This is her unboxing video that she shot with three Reds, and she's, by the way, she's doing a multi-cam edit, right?
So of 8K while she's doing the
photogrammetry. Yeah.
It's going to push it.
All right. Well, you know, you might as well. If you break it, it's going back to Apple anyway. Better to break it now than later. Lafore was very positive about it. He felt like this was a very good purchase for him. I don't think he bought. I think he's using a review unit, but he does do. I think he was very clear he was going to buy it, whether he got the review unit or not.
Yeah.
The level he recommends for photographers is a little less expensive, $88.99 with the 2.3.
That's the iMac Pro, right?
That's the iMac. Sorry. Yeah, the Mac Pro, $11,499. 3.2 gigahertz, 16 core, 48 gigs of RAM, 2 terabyte storage. And then for the Red 8K Filmmaker, you might want to spend a little more, $14,799 to get 16 cores, 96 gigs of RAM.
My favorite tweet of the day was Andrew Edwards, who's just arrived this morning, and he said they will make me sign for a $5 case, but they just left the box with it.
Oh my God.
Whoops.
Oh man, your heart's in your mouth then when you come home and see that and say, God, what if that had been stolen? Oh my God.
Well, what if the thief is actually kind of savvy and realizes, okay, this went from petty larceny to a felony larceny real damn quick. Mm. Where was that house, and how quickly can I paint my car brown and bring it back?
I hope the glitter bomb guy gets one of these boxes and owns a glitter bomb in that.
It's probably heavy to get away with elegantly.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine anything. It looks like
you'll open the door and say, what are you doing? The guy's like, give me a few more minutes, buddy.
I don't know. I've had people steal entire ferns off my front porch, and nobody has said anything to them. So I think people just don't look at that kind of thing.
They don't pay attention.
They stole the porch.
Yeah. He says, if I had to pick one word to describe the Mac Pro, it would be effortless. It's actually fun to work on. Feels like it works with you, not against you. He was really, really positive in his review.
I really like the way he breaks down the different sort of categories of people and the suggestions on what kind of Mac they should get. And also none of these recommendations were the fully spec'd ones. So it's a real, it really is like for reals.
It doesn't exist yet, right? Like I don't think the spec'd out option, well, the middle graphics cards don't exist yet and the 8 terabytes don't exist yet.
So you couldn't get it if you wanted it.
No, sadly.
He does say that the benchmarks he has aren't the ultimate because software doesn't fully support Metal yet. And so he thinks once he gets Metal-capable programs, there's going to be a significant difference.
Should be cool is because Final Cut just moved over to a Metal engine, and I believe he does use ProRes. So if he has that Afterburner card and he has Final Cut on Metal, then that should just like he might be doing one of those arrayed Red things where it's like nine cameras slate together craziness. But I think for like normal Red footage, that thing is going to scream.
It's fast. I mean, 14 minutes for the Mac Pro compared to 4 hours for the MacBook Pro. You know, it's fast.
And it's an ASIC, so they can improve that Afterburner card. You know, they can push out updates for it constantly.
Right. This is a 14-minute Red 8K file in DaVinci Resolve. DaVinci does not yet have Metal support.
No.
And so the
it has better grading, but no Metal.
Almost 15 minutes for the Mac Pro. So actually, I'm pleased. The MacBook Pro 16-inch with the 4-core Intel processor was 52 minutes, so it's still pretty good. It's in there. iMac Pro came very close at 17 minutes. So, but you know, when you're Vince LaFore, you need whatever you can get.
Well, we were joking about Marquez carrying his iMac Pro with him to events and stuff. Like some people take their PCs to coffee shops, but he said like he can't finish, or like he seems to be finishing in hours and overnight on a MacBook Pro.
It is an important point, though. You're not going to see the full speed unless you have apps that are multi-core. And if they're graphics apps that are Metal capable, that's going to make a big difference.
Excel is not going to go any faster.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
What about a pivot? You want pivot
you have to have a really heavy calculation in there for Excel to.
Yeah.
But that bears talking about. That are they? Has Apple made this amazing killer knocks on the back door of best in class desktop PC for a relatively small niche part of the market, while leaving a gap for people who just need for like developers who want more power? They certainly want to be able to build their apps faster, but they want more flexibility than they can get in an iMac or a Mac Mini. Like, would they have been better serving the Mac community by making a Mac Pro with a high ceiling of, let's say, $10,000 in its maximum configuration, but which suits more people?
I think that they just had to. The problem was, there's a lot of us in the production environment that really felt like we were going to leave the Apple platform completely. Like, I just assumed that there was a certain amount of time before I was going to have to stop using Macs at work, because the work that I'm doing requires more CPU than anything that Apple was putting out, anything that the trash can could do. And so the problem really is that, you know, I was already doing more and more work on PCs because Apple didn't have a solution. And because they're the only ones that make that hardware, them not having that high end, because I was building PCs from scratch that are $20,000, $25,000 in components, you know, to do, you know, 4 GPUs. And so even some of those had more GPU than this one will take. But the point is that we need to have that upper end. And I don't know how many people, like, when you think about it, Apple has, there's not a lot of gaps, in my opinion. There is, people might have assumptions about what they feel like they want, but from the Mac Mini to the top end Mac Pro, there's a pretty even gradation of what is available all the way up, especially if you consider Thunderbolt 3.
It correlate closely to price as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that you look at that.
That was for Mac years, Mini that was the selling point. I always told people that. The good news about Apple is pick your budget and then you'll find something.
And right now you can pick a budget for about $700 all the way up to $60,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. The cool thing, I'd forgotten this, but Jason Snell mentioned it on the talk show, that they were showing someone who did Hollywood soundtracks at WWDC in the lab across the street. And they said it took them 4 machines to have that one soundtrack previously, and they could load the whole thing up into RAM on the Mac Pro, and that was just a huge productivity win for them. So it's like there's video, there's audio, there's a bunch of categories that I think Apple's Pro workflow team just said, these are the bottlenecks that we need to solve. And this machine was expressly designed to solve for that. But the technologies in it, I think, are going to filter down, and then we're going to just see better Mac Minis and iMacs and things like that over the next couple of years.
I think one of Apple's concerns had to have been seeding that entire industry, because, you know, when you work at a visual effects firm, you never saw Macs. You know, like not in the recent and I used
we abandoned Macs. We went to Dell Precision Workstations with Premiere. Right. When the big change with Final Cut happened.
We just couldn't. But I mean, like, for instance, Maya is built on a Mac and a PC, but you would never in a large firm work on a Mac.
Right.
Because it's just not powerful enough. Right. You know, and so having hardware, I mean, the one, you know, chink in the armor here is the lack of NVIDIA cards.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's still.
So their answer to that, because I did ask about that, their answer is that because they still can't work with NVIDIA, basically they still want to write to the metal. NVIDIA still says no. Is they're getting all those companies to port to AMD. And I think they showed a list and it was like they said, there's two problems. There's people who want the specifics of NVIDIA that they can't solve, but there's people who just want the apps that they want. And there's people who want certain kinds of performance. And they think that they can meet by the end of this year, which is around now, they should be able to meet both those other criteria.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I haven't had to deal with it for a couple of years, so it may have gotten better. But, you know, the big problem that we had with what was ATI and now AMD and NVIDIA was just the way that they handled, the way that they packaged up the processing, yeah. Is that the ATI cards or AMD cards would break them up into much smaller pieces, and it just made it much harder to do the calculation than with NVIDIA. And it was much more driven towards games, where NVIDIA had, you know, had a better management of the overall process from a visual effects perspective.
Can you still use an eGPU? I mean, you wouldn't with a Mac Pro. But
I don't think
if you
so.
Have a Mac Mini.
I don't think so. Not with Catalina.
Catalina.
I think you just have to wait, right? Because some 14-year-old is hacking those drivers right now.
So NVIDIA said, we're not going to do any more drivers for Apple. So I know you were able to use NVIDIA cards with NVIDIA drivers in an eGPU for a while.
But I don't think it was as efficient. You know, I think that it was kind of a hack.
Okay.
And well, now they wouldn't support Metal really either, even with their drivers. Right. They wanted you to write to their CUDA cores.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, it'll probably work for, and it's not that it's unworkable. It's just that it was definitely unfortunate.
Can AMD make better graphics processors?
And I think they can. I mean,
if they see this as a market and they've got Apple now 100%,
It might be worth it. Maybe hopefully that they'll build ones with the kind of horsepower we're asking.
So it would have to come from both directions. Software developers would have to start supporting it, and then
software developers technically, and Renee, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but technically the software developers only have to support
Metal, and then
like they write to Metal, and then Apple should be able to take full advantage of the card. I mean that's the whole
so
idea.
So you want better Metal support from AMD is what you want.
Yeah, where Apple needs to do that and. And then AMD just needs to build beefier cards.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that AMD is doing, for example, is when Apple wants to go to VR, they just move everything out of the way and they write directly to the card in machine language. Right. And that apparently other vendors aren't so excited about those sorts of things. But AMD will literally let them do whatever they want with that hardware.
You know, AMD, it strikes me that this is an opportunity for AMD. They've, you know, with the Ryzen, they've really shown that they can beat Intel at their own game. NVIDIA is saying we're not going to support Macs. There are a lot of Mac users now who want these Mac Pros. I think this is an opportunity for AMD.
It is.
They've got it. Maybe it's a resource issue for them as well, but I would guess Apple would like to help them.
Yeah,
you think Apple will take the silicon over and eventually just do their own GPUs?
I don't think so.
They don't want to do that?
No, I just think that it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot to do.
They have 1,000 chip engineers.
It's just that it's not
a big
enough market.
They won't sell a lot. Like it's not
right.
Good.
From
right.
Apple's perspective, okay. You know, the big money is in their iPads and iPhones and maybe their laptops. But
which
this
have
is,
Apple silicon
embedded GPUs. Graphics, maybe.
Yeah.
Like they might take over the embedded. If they go to ARM Max, they'll probably do their own GPUs because they're already making their own GPUs for iOS devices. Right. But discrete GPUs, I think it's a hard
yeah,
business
think that's
to
business
justify.
You're saying, Andy?
It would depend on what problem they're trying to solve. I don't know what problem that they would solve by making their own desktop grade GPUs. They would have to buy a lot of companies, buy a lot of people to gain lots of experience to even get out the door with that. It's not just having the capability. It's having the knowledge and the relationships that matters. And I don't know what kind of a problem they could solve by manufacturing their own GPU that would be worth everything they would have to do to even be capable of doing something like that.
You know, out of sync in our chat room is pointing out something important, which is that AMD GPUs are used in the Xbox, I think in the PlayStation as well. So that's a big market.
Well, and they've always been that way. Again, they work really well in the game environment. The way that they build, the way that the GPUs work really
it's
well.
It's just different for the pro environment.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. Different. Yeah. So that's the issue. They're built for games. originally, and they're
used because that's the market, right?
That was the market that they got that they really leveraged.
And NVIDIA used to leverage that market as well. I mean, they would pay game makers to say at the beginning of the game works best with NVIDIA.
They did, and but there was a huge NVIDIA market, you know, for in the pro area. They, you know, and a lot of the really heavy lifting is something that they were kind of.
Is it's CUDA not that a better technology than Metal? No.
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think Metal's better for a Mac developer.
But Apple went with OpenCL for a while, and that was maybe a dead end. Is that why they're a
little... Metal has the advantage that it's heterogeneous and homogeneous, but they can target anything. They can target the CPU, the graphics card, the T2 chip on a Mac that has it, and they can handle all that. If they can figure out, like, oh, this sucks at H.265, we'll offload that to the T, and they just handle all that so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot easier for developers to get the most performance out of the computer to just write to Metal. You know, there might be a handful that could write straight to the, you know, straight, you know, to the card, but you're gonna get, you know, the most power out of just
like Gus Mueller and Lorne Richter and a couple other people.
The other thing to maybe think about is that if Apple really is serious about self-driving cars or just building the boxes for self-driving cars, that is NVIDIA's like gift. That is the thing that NVIDIA, like, wow, we didn't realize that we were in the self-driving car business, but apparently we are, because that's taking visual input from cameras and processing them and making them into 3D understandings of the world is really the GPU intensive thing of the 2010s and 2020s. So if Apple really is serious about doing that, they might decide that there's nothing off the shelf or nothing that they want to build a better relationship with NVIDIA over, they may as well start from scratch and create their own GPUs for that project. And that might filter down into desktops and laptops.
Speaking of the T2 chip, interesting story in 9to5 Mac and patently Apple. Apparently Apple has just gotten a patent for the fingerprint reader in the new MacBook 16-inch. Up to now, fingerprint readers on iPhones have been capacitive. It is an optical sensor, and it works very well. I have to say, on my 16-inch, it's just as fast. I didn't even know that was a different kind of sensor. This might be telling. Perhaps optical underscreen sensors might be coming to the iPhone as well. So they got a patent on it. It's already in the MacBook 16. What do you think?
It's a rumor. For was it this year or next year?
It's a rumor that it was.
That came up. Yeah. That there would be in the not too distant future, there would be phones with Face ID and Touch ID,
right.
And the Touch ID would be optical like that. So, you know, there would still be no physical home button, but there would be a way for you to use your finger to unlock your phone. So, yeah, I see that coming, especially now that we're looking at a patent. That means, you know, we're looking at evidence of them, you know, working toward that. And,
well,
and
have,
with
and
the
it's
16-inch MacBook Pro having it already existing. Yeah.
And my experience has been it's very fast, very accurate. It does a great job. It's just as good as the capacitive Touch ID was on the iPhone, for sure.
Yeah.
I love it. By the way,
it was gnarly for a couple of vendors for a couple of models for a while, but it's gotten way better.
Oh, I'm
yeah, like
happy.
Some of them, they made and I think Qualcomm just introduced an even newer version of the ultrasonic as well that just takes up way more space. So it's because you don't see the physical target, it's like a virtual target, and people weren't getting false readings or it wasn't taking an accuracy. So now they're just making them bigger and bigger. And hopefully it'll be so big at some point that it won't really feel like it's a sensor. It's just I'm picking up my phone and it's unlocking.
Yeah. I'm very happy. By the way, that's 16. This morning, I was using it at breakfast, and I sent a Slack, and Slack has that kind of like the male whoosh, but it has a elaborate stereo whoosh. And Lisa said, "What the hell's that?" She thought it was like a jet airplane thing. The speakers on that thing are so good. And I said, "It's the speakers on this MacBook. Listen," and I played some music. It's just mind-bogglingly good. Go ahead.
I went back to the butterfly one because I had to get a bunch of files off, and I was like, "What am I typing on?" It's only been 2 weeks. My brain already says
thank
that.
Thank you.
It's so funny how your brain just resets normal on you, and then everything else that was normal is just totally abnormal now. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this as much. I really like, and I'm like, no, I'm not going back anymore.
No.
I'm all in on the new one.
And I've reconfigured my touch bar because even though they moved it away from the keyboard, I kept hitting it. A Siri would launch or my calendar would launch something. So, and I've recommended Better Touch Tool. If you have a touch bar, you just have to
have
that Better Touch Tool. And there's a chaos configuration for Better Touch Tool. Installed that, turned a bunch of stuff off, And now I have lots of information on my touch bar and nothing I can hit that will launch
anything.
That's
so much more helpful, though, right?
And that's it's great. It tells me battery. It tells me my next calendar. It tells me weather. And then if I press a key, I can get, you know, one thing I do that I can touch is the window snapping and the full screen. I do that a lot. I'm moving windows around and stuff. And that's just really handy. So you can, you know, I revised my opinion of the touch bar. Apple, as shipped, it's not very good. But if you take some time to configure it with better touch tool, it's actually pretty good. Yeah. And then I could press the function key to get function buttons. I could press the command key. I could see my dock, which is awesome. If I press the command key, it shows my dock. So if my dock's hidden, it's a very quick way. I really am very happy. If you add, it's the Chaos, I can't remember what it's called, Chaos Theory, something plug-in for touch tool. It's really good. Is that what you use, Renee?
I like the informational stuff. I haven't changed this one yet because I use it as normal in Final Cut and Safari. I still haven't found anything that lets me scrub faster than the touch bar. And I'm so used to scrubbing on iOS now, it's just very easy to go through tons of tabs or tons of timelines with the touch bar. But I will eventually install it again.
Better touch tool, and it's Golden Chaos is the name of the UI replacement. It's a free download. Somebody spent a lot of time. And the only negative on this is you will look at it and go, oh, my God, look at all those things. But the default settings is pretty good. And then I literally went through and just turned off anything that I might hit by accident because I just don't – that's the biggest problem I have with that touch bar.
Yeah. Isn't that a little bit disconcerting that a developer will have both the impulse and also the commercial viability to create something known as the complete UI replacement for something that Apple developed?
Isn't that always the case? Like the indies code circles around Apple. Like Apple and Google and Microsoft have all this money, and I've never found an indie who didn't just code circles around them.
You know, the hard part with any large corporation is that there's a concern around brand. There's a concern around what it's going to look like and how it's going to work, and that generates a whole bunch of
committees. It's committees and
meetings, and there's product managers, and so you know, I was talking to someone about, you know, we built a bunch of tools, and the fact that I could call my developer one day and tell him I need this changed, and the next day it's working. You know, you can't do that in a big company. That's 3 weeks or 3 months of development and meetings and millions of dollars, and it's just a big ship. You can't you can do things in a rowboat that you can't do in a tanker.
There's also like the rest of the world to consider. And, if Apple is creating a user experience on the touch bar, they have to take everyone into consideration and they can't be niche about it. Whereas something like Better Touch Tools, that's like me as the user am choosing to download this very niche thing and using these very specific tools. So it can be more creative and interesting. But, you know, that the idea is that you have to make it broad enough that nobody hates it, you know? So, you know, Apple can't go around like making a user interface that, you know, 20% of the population hates. They have to make it innocuous or uninteresting and unusable. And I think that's kind of where the touch bar is at, is that the interface and the options for the interface that come with it, come with macOS, they're nothing. They're kind of pointless and useless. But then this is where the indie developers can come in and like capitalize on that and show off how creative they're. One of the great things about iOS and macOS and iPadOS is it's also a playing field for developers to be creative. It allows them to do that.
That's what a good OS is, a platform.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, and those that they are little chinks can be a lot of money. I mean, I think that, you know, when Final Cut, up until Final Cut 7, the green screen keyer was horrible. You know, like the green screen keyer that shipped with Final Cut 7. And we filled that niche, and you know, we made $30,000-$40,000 a month, you know, on filling that niche. You know, so it was a good niche to fill for a long time. You know, and so it's you know, those are great opportunities for developers. I think that's the beauty of it, is that developers have those little gaps that they can fill and generate some revenue.
So you'll remember that President Trump went to Austin to the Flex plant with Tim Cook. Opened the plant that had been open for 3 years, and Apple.
Such a weird flex.
Apple announced that they were going to make the Mac Pro in Texas. Not so fast. They are making the Mac Pro being sold in the U.S. in Texas. Now, don't tell the president this, but here's a picture from 9 to 5 Mac of a Mac Pro purchased in Europe, designed by Apple in California, assembled in China. The original plan was to have the Mac Pro assembled by Quanta in China, and apparently that plan for everywhere but the U.S. continues. And that makes sense. It may be cheaper to – well, part of it is tariffs, right?
Right.
And what a bullet Apple dodged December 15th, which was Sunday. That was when the big tariffs were supposed to kick in, the very significant tariffs on many of the things that Apple sells and buys and makes, anything coming out of China. And in a 11th hour settlement, Apple or China and the United States made a trade deal and averted those tariffs. So I don't know if that's going to affect Quanta's manufacture of the Mac Pro, but that is a big deal.
Well, it's probably capacity still less expensive too. Like they have to ramp. Yeah.
There's well, I don't know. You think they're selling that many Mac Pros? Maybe they are now.
Oh yeah.
They may be because I think I see a lot of people buying them, which is kind of interesting.
I think there's a lot of pent up demand.
Yeah.
And they had to ramp up too before the whole Texas factory thing was settled. They probably had to start producing them for the rest of the world and everywhere. And in case it didn't work out, they probably had to have that set up as well.
Lori, I know you listened to the analyst calls. Did Apple say anything about tariffs in the last quarter? Did they say, well, here is the problem. December 15th, they would have had to raise the price on the iPhone by $150. We already know that. They're probably at the max they can charge, so that means they would have eaten it. That would have cut seriously into profits.
I think the best they mentioned at the time was that there was nothing to worry about, that they weren't going to raise the price of products, and that they were, you know, had positive, you know, hopes for the future. They're always vague with it, right? But I think what they were basically getting at was that, number one, that they're working toward diversifying where products are being made, and number two, that until that happens, that the consumer is not going to see the negative effect of that.
The deal was made December 12th. The tariffs would have gone into effect that Sunday. 15% import duty, or as Bloomberg calls it, important duty on iPhones, iPads, and MacBooks. 15%, a significant...
How happy Mark looks.
Yeah, he's happy to be on TV. There he is.
Yeah.
That would have been a significant bump. And Apple would probably have had to absorb that. I don't think that Apple would be able to raise the prices. Maybe on the MacBook, but not on the iPhone.
They've eaten them so far. I think they would keep eating them.
They're paying duties on the Apple Watch, on AirPods, on the iMac, on the HomePod. I'm not sure if this new deal, and I don't think Bloomberg knew, says some of these levies may be rolled back if the new deal gets rid of those tariffs, but they're going to look at reducing existing tariffs on Chinese products. So they were eating a significant amount. I have to point out, though, did you see Asimco, Horace Didiu's analysis of the others category, the wearables category? And based on his analysis...
The beleaguered one.
and we should say Horace is very good. I think his track record on these estimates...
Former Nokia guy.
Yeah, he knows what he's talking about, and he has done this before. Apple doesn't break these out, but he was able somehow to break out, he believes, of the others wearables category, $5.2 billion from last quarter, $5.2 billion on the Apple Watch in revenue. But the one that blew me away, $4 billion on the AirPods last quarter.
It's an okay business.
Bigger than iPod.
Bigger than iPod. Ever at its peak. $16 billion a year on AirPods.
And it's growing.
And I was the guy who said, oh, Apple, you blew it buying Beats. Man, what a mistake you made. $3 billion. They paid for that in less than a quarter. Jeez Louise.
Well, is that properly a Beats product, though?
Well, I bet you it all gets rolled in, right? Don't you think?
They've made Beats better. Conversely, like the H1 and their new lab has really fixed the Beats sound. Like the Beats sounds so much better now that Apple's got their hands on them.
Yeah.
I don't think you buy AirPods because they sound good. You buy AirPods because everybody else has
you don't buy them because they sound good.
They don't sound that. But even the Pro, but you get the little thing and your magic. It's amazing.
It's a meme.
Yeah. Also, credit where credit's due. They just work fantastically, and it's not all about sound. It really is about when I the experience of using them. The fact that you've got this case that is both as you can't possibly I don't think make it any smaller, and it's very satisfying to open and close. The damn things just work. Every day there are at least 18 truly wireless headphones as a special deal on Amazon, but you know that they're just junk. They cost $30 or $40. $40. Some of them are $40 or $50, but you buy them and they kind of work, but not really. It's a very, very satisfying product. It really makes me excited about what Apple could do if they decided that let's basically come up with a list of products, consumer electronics that cost less than, let's say, $300. And that we think that we could really move the needle on it, because there are people who could really benefit from Apple design, who maybe they're the people who have to who want to buy the cheaper of the iPhones, but they do have $169 to spend on really good wireless headphones. If it's going to make their that part of their day of putting in headphones every morning and every afternoon as they commute to work a little bit better. So this is why I think this is the Apple Watch is a fantastic product that doesn't cost very much. Relatively speaking, AirPods, again, fantastic product, doesn't cost very much. I would love to see what they could do with other sort of categories by saying we're going to bring Apple design where if we are charging 20 or 30% more than a competitive product, it's going to be $10 to $15 or $30 more as opposed to $400, $500, $2,000, $3,000 more.
And I don't know, I might be missing something, but you know, like for me, when I look at the HomeKit stuff, I just want all the HomeKit stuff to work the way my Apple stuff works. You know, I just want to just open it up and I turn it on, I plug it in, and it talks to my phone, and then it's there. You know, like, and I haven't had that experience so far.
Yeah, HomeKit is, I struggle with it for sure, that sometimes it works. Honestly, I think a lot of it has to do with the Siri capability than it does. When I open my app, my Home app, most of the time, but not all of the time, everything's connected and I can just touch something. But the idea of HomeKit is that you're supposed to, like, it's supposed to work with Siri. That's the joy of it. And that's where it all falls apart for me, that I'm calling out to my digital assistant to turn the lights on or you know, lock a door or something. And a third of the time it doesn't recognize it. It has an issue. It doesn't connect. It takes a minute. And, you know, there's just nothing works that way for me. So yeah, HomeKit has a long way to go for sure.
I have the opposite problem right now. And I was blaming Siri for a lot of it because Siri will say, I can't reach it and the stuff will happen anyway. And I get so confused, but my lights wouldn't work. And it's the Hue bridge now. I have to unplug it and plug it back in every like week or so where nothing keeps responding. I don't know, does it get full? It's like those headphones you had to restart. I'm just ready for home stuff to be better.
Right.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be great if home... Go ahead.
Apple needs to start making their own HomeKit things, and then we'll probably start seeing some improvement on that because, you know, AirPods work so well because they're made by Apple, they're designed by Apple, top to bottom, they're 100% in charge of how well it works. And so right now, Apple doesn't make HomeKit things. Apple makes right. HomeKit, and then other people make HomeKit things. So Samsung if Apple started Amazon making do. Their own, yep. yeah, if, yeah. Exactly. If Apple started making their own light bulbs and their own, you know, video systems or security systems and stuff, then we would definitely see some improvements on reliability because they would be in charge.
That's kind of brilliant, Laurie. I mean, I think that their next home run product could be what if they were to create their version of the Ring doorbell. Only you're not terrified that this is going to be hijacked by outside people or that they're going to make deals with local police. What if they made like an internal a camera for a version of the Nest camera where it's not necessarily attached to Google, which is a company that you certainly wouldn't trust as much as Apple. They have one of their greatest assets really is their amazing track record on privacy and security, because the only time you ever hear of a security breach or a privacy breach is usually when you unwind it. It comes down to Esther decided to use the exact same password and username pair on everything. We've said this before that if I trust Google with a lowercase t to have a Nest camera for where I need it, but if Apple decided to create a camera like that, I uppercase T trust Apple with that sort of thing. And I think that's something that they could sell to every single person who has other Apple hardware inside their offices and homes.
And I don't know how far it goes. Maybe HomeKit is the right answer, but I do feel like there's an integrated lifestyle that a lot of us want to have with a lot of our components that we just don't have right now because nothing's talking to each other.
Apple, know? To really compete, though, with Google and Amazon on this front, ought to have a HomePod with a screen. I know you guys
are a router. I would start at the router and build up from there.
But the screen to me, for instance, I have a Google Nest doorbell and I have a Google Nest Home Hub Max with a screen. When somebody's at my doorbell, rings the doorbell, I'm sitting in the kitchen. I see them immediately on the screen. I see it identifies them by name. It says they're at the door. I could talk to them. I can hear them. The screen is a really important part of a lot
Would
of
an iPad docking hub be okay with you, or is that too much?
No, because then I have to have my iPad. What I want is I already got the HomePod in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. It just needs a screen. I mean, I don't know why they don't have a screen. Everybody else is putting screens on their devices.
And they're making them really affordable. Google during the holidays, you can buy the Google Home with a screen for about $60-$70. Yeah. And if you throw a screen on the HomePod, which is this, it kind of makes me sad that they launched it to so much fanfare. But it's in the holiday picture at the Apple Store. It's like it doesn't matter if it's off to the side and another product is covering it up a little bit. Apple seems to have not invested as much pride in it. If they were to find a way to make that for $200 with a screen and basically make it Siri screen or whatever you want to call it, that would be amazing.
If you go to the new Fifth Avenue store, they have an entire room, like a lounge for the HomePod. And it must be a lonely room, but it's completely built out and it's got posters of the HomePod all over it.
Yeah. The HomePod did not make Time Magazine's list of the top 10 gadgets for the decade.
Not this year. No.
If you know, it did make so this is for the decade, 2010 to 2019. iPad, number one on there. And also the Apple Watch. And also AirPods, Apple Pods. So
I would flip the watch and iPad, but that's just me.
Watch is more important than the iPad. Yes,
I think so. I think
iPad's
the iPad
number one. I'm not sure
it was
one.
No, it was in the date, isn't it? I thought it was the date.
It's chronological.
They didn't have one in 2011. For some reason, nothing happened in 2011.
Then the Chromecast of 2013.
I forgot the Raspberry Pi on my list, and now I really regret it.
Pi definitely belongs. Exactly. That is an empowering technology that has changed the world. I mean, that's amazing.
I really wish Apple would build their own version of that on like an A.
You know, Intel A12. Did. Remember the Edison? And it was
the Apple Pi.
But the thing is it would just be so great to be able to
with a Mac OS on it or iOS.
Yeah,
with
no, Renee, seriously, call it the Apple IV. I'm not even joking. One of the things I love about my Raspberry Pis, and which is why I have like now about a dozen of them, is that they really do open your mind, whether you're 10 years old or considerably past 10 years old as I am, to the idea that whatever solution I want that involves technology, I can probably build it. I don't have to buy something off the shelf, except for the Raspberry Pi. But all I have to do is know some Python, know how to operate a soldering iron, and know how to watch a YouTube video that explains how to do something, and I can make something. I think that's very much in keeping with the heritage of the Apple II line of computers. The only difficulty is that you couldn't get Apple to create a desktop operating system environment for an Apple IV type of computer. And ooh boy, I don't think that Apple is a company that would say, here is a version of Linux that we absolutely endorse for use on our card product.
I think even an iOS would be fine, you know, on it.
I don't think they have
They're
such
not gonna
pride.
Do that.
iOS is such a dogmatic thing for them that this is the jewel in the crown. This is their point of pride.
This is not what Apple wants to make. Is a hobbyist.
No, but it would be wonderful.
Oh, I agree. But and maybe somebody's done a Hackintosh Raspberry Pi, but I just don't see Apple.
There is. You can run like classic up to system 6.2, I think,
really?
Software. Oh,
really?
Yeah. No, I,
That's
I
cool.
have.
I can make I, a little got, Mac. A $35
I've got,
Mac. Oh,
I've
look
got
at
Mac
you.
OS running on this.
That's a Game Boy.
And, I have like it's such a trip to run like Mac Paint on this that it's like, oh my
on
God.
A Game Boy. Wow.
Yeah.
By the way, here's a sad story. Remember that great app that turned your iPhone into an iPod and it even had the haptic feedback and all of that?
Did you actually get a chance to download and play it?
No, and Apple killed it.
I didn't get around to it. Yeah.
It's called
Rewound. It was so cute.
Rewound said the app got up to number 19 on the app charts. He said the designer of it said it was, this is his Medium post about it, said it was specifically designed to avoid any violation of Apple trademarks. Look at that. It looks just like an iPod. Yes.
Wouldn't you make a Zune version out of Vengeance now?
Yeah, do a Zune version rewound.
That's funny.
Yeah. Apple, look at it. It's doing so well on the charts. 734,000% increase in sales. and there was even an explosion of skins for it, so you could make it. Wow.
Yeah, and that was how they're getting around it. They say, well, no, it just happens to have like a bare space underneath it. And we of course would never provide something that makes it look exactly like a classic iPod, but we will allow you to install your own. And I really think that they tried as hard as humanly possible to say, Apple, it is now up to you to either be a jerk about this and decide that this is the platform of no fun, or to simply say, you know what, we're going to just pretend that we're going to say that on the yay or nay thing on this, it could have gone either way. We're just going to put our thumb on the scale and say that we're not going to worry about this. Oh no, people are enjoying this. We can't have that happen.
Rewound writes, Apple have carte blanche over the App Store and they got salty. So you can also not charge for Apple Music features, but they had already approved the in-app purchase. They were worried that people would mistake it for an Apple product, at which point he shows his horrible buttons and says, not going to happen. So they can't update the app to get it reapproved without breaking the app for existing users. So they're going to upload a separate version to comply with Apple's changes. And you can go to the Rewound app. I'm not sure what they say. It's going to live under the... So you'll have to... I get it. So it's crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. You'll have to go there to...
If they decide to make an Android version of that, I am totally buying it on the Play Store. Let's see if Apple can yell at Google and say... Hey,
they probably can. I mean, like Apple and Nintendo, there's some companies that it's never worth the effort.
Don't
like
mess with
it's
Apple.
So much heart and soul. We love them so much. We want to be part of them. We have huge nostalgia for them. But there's just some companies who I would never go anywhere. Other companies are really cool about kind of like, they think of it as remixes, as rewinds, as helping spread their brand and their love. And just there are some companies who are not that.
So I love actually this is a better workaround. They're doing a crowdfunding. And you can go to rewound.fund to support it to write a PWA, a progressive web app at rewound.app, which will work on the iPhone, but won't have to go through the store. So Apple won't be able to stop it. That ultimately, and this is why I think Apple's support of PWAs has been so lukewarm. This is the way you get around the store. If Apple is smart, they will support it because then that eliminates all of the lawsuits and the pressure they're getting about their monopoly with the App Store. They can always
their official policy was that, you know, like if you're Playboy, make a web app. That's like the open App Store. Yeah. That's what lets them get out of trouble quite often in terms of the control they have over the App Store. I think the PWA thing was just that was a technological load. That was a load too far for them. They've come around to that. But I think anything that helps them have that second ecosystem is helpful for them so many political and internal levels.
Yeah. So do it. Support it. They are. I mean, they have service workers in Safari. They're starting to support. It's not as well supported as maybe on other platforms, but it's pretty good. Yeah. The Rewound web app and Android app, Andy, you'll be happy to hear, is on GoFundMe. And so far they've only raised 121 euros, but that's probably because nobody knows.
I will go fund that.
Go fund it.
This is one of those statements that I think anybody has to preface with. I'm not joking here, but when you think about it, we're now at a stage where the iPod is. We're soon going to be at the stage where the iPod is 20 years old, which means that you're at a point where people who were teenagers and in college when they got their first iPod are going to start feeling nostalgic for this device that was a central part of their lives every single day. Just like I find myself getting nostalgic for like a cassette, a Discman and a cassette Walkman. Not enough to spend $500 for one that works, but still I kind of get that feeling of, oh, wouldn't it be cool to like be pressing buttons and wouldn't it be cool to make mixtapes again? And I'm not suggesting this is a large part of the market, but this is going to become an ongoing urge to the Apple community that I kind of want to touch. I kind of want to reconnect with the technology that Apple created, the software that Apple created, that can put me back into those great feelings of when I was in school and used HyperCard for the first time. And that's the sort of thing that I get into with emulators. That it's not as I'm not trying to lose myself in the past, but it is really, really fun to revisit Mac Draw, particularly after I was a super, super, super fan of it. I loved it. It was like my main means of artistic expression back in the day. And to get a chance to play with that again is a really, really big deal. So I'm not saying that this is a market that Apple needs to cater to or even necessarily would want to cater to. But I think that they're going to find a lot more pressure coming from people as they enter their 30s and 40s and 50s to want to revisit, you know, they want to revisit macOS 10.0. They want to revisit what a Color Classic was like. They want to revisit what an iPod was like. So they might have to, this might be an ongoing thing. They might have to at least loosen their grips on a little bit just for the good of the land.
I neglected to mention the bottom line on iFixit's teardown of the Mac Pro. A maximum, I think, repairability score. You can see the needle's pegged
it's 9. Hovering, it's wavering.
The only reason it's not 10 is the SSD cards are modular. They're probably using the T2 chip, so you can't get your own SSD in there. But you could put your own. Yeah, you could, because it doesn't have SATA. I'm sure it has SATA, right? So you could put an Intel or a Samsung SSD.
There are a bunch of bays that you can fill up.
Bays. Yeah. You can fill the bays.
It's probably the first time iFixit has given Apple a score anything above 3 ever.
I know. It's amazing.
it's the first time the heat gun at that lab stayed cold for the entire teardown. Yeah. There must have been like drinking and partying.
And this is a really important one, and this might be something a little new about Apple. Apple provides some step numbers and diagrams for disassembly right on the device. They're on the device. And publishes free repair manuals for some repairs. So
that's say they use the heat gun to get the cheese off after.
That's please don't grate cheese.
You got to toast the cheese on the top. You can't just like put the cheese on top of the bagel and serve it. You kind of want to give that extra little bit of char on the top.
Yeah, no. What is that cheese?
A very, very smart move.
They shave at New Year's on Switzerland. That's what you need to use, that nice soft cheese. Let's take a little break and then some good news for Alex's hometown. But first,
outstanding
news. But first, a word from Taylor Store. I would say I'm wearing a Taylor Store shirt, but I'm not. And it's actually kind of an ill-fitting shirt. This is the last time I buy shirts off the rack. All my shirts from now on, custom made by Taylor Store. They don't cost anymore, and they do an amazing thing. You don't actually have to go to Hong Kong or get a tailor to come to you and measure you. Taylor Store has an app called Size Me. It's on the iPhone. It's on Android. You put your phone on the ground. You take pictures of yourself, just a couple, and they will get your sizes from that using statistics and AI to generate your sizes. Now, once they're in at TaylorStore.com, you can choose from a selection of pre-designed dress shirts, all with your unique fit, or, and I love this, if you want to take some time, if you're a customizer, you can customize with their design tool, and it's amazing. You can change everything, the sleeves, the collars, the cuffs, pocket or no pocket, back details, bottom cut. You want tails? You want it square cut? Buttons? You can even change the button thread, so you get a contrasting thread. And so much more. I love my Taylor Store shirts. They have a big variety of very nice fabrics. I'm a kind of a fabric snob when it comes to my shirts, and they have the best fabrics I've ever seen. They're adding features all the time. Their newest feature, a hidden button down on your shirt collar, and a collar curve which adapts to the curve of your shoulders. They guarantee it will fit, by the way. If you go through the process with Size Me and then get a shirt and it comes and it's a little off, no problem. You take a picture of the fit, show them where it's missing, send it to them. They'll send you another. You don't have to return the old shirt. You can give it to Goodwill or keep it if you want. All you need is two pictures, and they will make the necessary adjustments and send you your new shirt properly at no cost. It's a Swedish company, and I have to say they're doing it right. It's not sweatshop labor. The shirts are made in their custom factories in Sri Lanka. In fact, if you order a shirt from Taylor Store, you can have them send you pictures of the shirt being made. It's carbon neutral. They buy carbon credits for everything. The gas used to drive the car to work in the morning, they have a carbon credit for. So, and they're using amazing, beautiful fabrics. These seamstresses in Sri Lanka, and I'm sure seamsters, the sewing folk, do such a nice job. It's beautifully made, every stitch in place. Whenever you want to look your best in clothes that fit perfectly for your body, go to taylorstore.com/twit. I always wanted custom shirts, never thought I could afford them. You can right now when you use the code TWIT, you'll get 50% off your first dress shirt, as little as $39. Also free shipping, by the way. I love my shirts from Taylor Store. That's all I buy now. TaylorStore.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT. Experience the unrivaled fit and comfort of Taylor Store's handpicked fabrics for yourself. Terms and conditions apply. Go to TaylorStore.com/twit. And don't forget the offer code TWIT. It's TWIT, but they'll know you saw it on Mac Break Weekly, and they'll give us credit. So TWIT is the offer code. Thank you, Taylor Store. It's really fun. It's a really great process. Once you get the size in there, you just order. I go back all the time. I should have worn my flamingo shirt. The best shirt I wore all through the cruise. Do you know this building in Pittsburgh, the Athletic Association building, Alex?
Lindsay? I do know where that building is.
90,000 square foot space. Apple is eyeing it. It's undergoing a $25 million renovation.
Most pointedly, it is about, if I remember correctly, it's two or three blocks from Carnegie Mellon.
Oh, that's why. Yeah, because why would Apple be in Pittsburgh?
Well, they have. I think that the iWork team is there. You know, is downtown. I've never been there, but I've never met them. But I've heard that
it's near University of Pittsburgh and CMU.
Yeah, Pitt and Carnegie Mellon are right next to each other, and this is right between the two. But I think that of Pitt and Carnegie Mellon, the one that is the primary target is Carnegie Mellon.
There's one other connection. They get their stainless steel for the Mac Pro from
U.S.
Allegheny Technologies.
Alcoa.
Is that Alcoa? Allegheny Technologies?
Allegheny Technologies? I don't know.
Yeah.
It might be a part of Alcoa.
Yeah.
But Alcoa is there. I don't know for sure. But yeah, I think that its position with Carnegie Mellon is probably the primary reason to put it right where they're putting it. Nice. And it's a lot of space that's open that's in Pittsburgh. But for them being near the universities
part of it.
I mean, for all of these companies. And Google has a huge presence not very far away. So
East Liberty. Yeah, you want to be near the engineers.
East Liberty, which is about 10 minutes from there, there's a huge Google presence that keeps on getting bigger. And again, a lot of it has to do with getting a hold of the university students early, because it's for, you know, getting capacity for these companies is everything.
You wouldn't think you could make the camera and the iPhone any better, despite what Marques Brownlee says.
Ew.
The iPhone was really...
I lost so much money betting on the Royale Flex Pi in that competition. The odds were so good. I was so sure after the Pogo phone almost took it last year that I could really flex that Pi.
You got to really wonder. I guess you can't crowdsource this kind of stuff.
He explained it brilliantly. He said, like, every time the bright photo would win, because, you know, that people would pick and when they couldn't pick the bright, like when they were equally bright, they would pick the one that had no depth of field, because obviously a better camera has better focus.
Yeah, it's all in focus. So Marques does this every year. He does a blind shootout where he takes pictures with a bunch of phones and does a bracket. iPhone was eliminated almost immediately, which just tells you how good this is. And I think was the winner the Samsung Galaxy Note 10? Was that the winner? I can't remember what the winner was.
Yeah, it was the Galaxy Note 10 and the Galaxy 10e were both at the end bracket, and he took exactly the same photo, but because the 10e was magenta and he shot it through a window, it had a slight magenta haze due to the reflection of the casing on it, and people could see that, so they obviously picked the way better identical camera.
So it's a good thing to do in theory, but in practice it turns out. And this is, by the way, why Samsung does what it does with its photos. It pops the color. It over sharpens, I think. If you pixel peep at Samsung pictures, they're not very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
They crush, you know, stuff. But
doesn't it remind you of like how Instagram used to correct for bad cameras with filters, and now the cameras are good, and the cameras have to try to correct for the lack of resolution in Instagram and Twitter? But the only thing that I would have liked
is like the iPhone really did a bad job on that photo. Like he said, he took it over and over again, and it just kept the white balance kept being blue. But I would have liked to have seen a couple of first rounds of different kinds so that if a camera did have a misfire or if it's better on landscapes than it is on people, that would have been the first round of elimination. And maybe like a wrestling tournament, you have like the first round is round robin, and then you go to the elimination for the final.
I was surprised. I mean, all the best, what I consider the best camera phones, the Pixel 4, the iPhone 11, The OnePlus, all of the, you know, the Huawei, none of them made it. So it's like, well, okay, fine.
it's hard to tell somebody. Well, yeah, exactly. It's hard to tell somebody you're wrong for liking the picture that you liked. Right. And so that's why I think that when I, as late as 5 years ago, when I would be reviewing a phone, there would be a really, really important point to my, even if I'm just testing one iPhone, to bring five different phones with me and take the same shot over and over again, just to compare how's it dealing with the shadows? How's it dealing with that big highlights from the sky? At this point, I got the most angry I ever got with people, with my followers on Twitter. And I mean, like a parent just being disappointed in their children. I know that sounds horrible, but is when I was just posting a couple of pictures, like unedited from the iPhone and from the Pixel 4. And it was nothing but, oh God, what isn't it horrible that Google doesn't care about fidelity that way? And exactly the same people say, different people say the exact same thing about Apple, where it's like, look, This is not an emphatic side by side comparison. You're looking at one picture that's been beaten up by Twitter, but Twitter's processor on it, and it's not, this one picture is not going to tell you anything. I just thought that maybe you would be curious to see two very, very sensible but differing approaches to the same scene. So now nowadays I'm trying to figure out what the best compromise is, and I'm thinking that maybe I should start with, say, when I post real pictures saying I want you to here's my explanation of what I think about these cameras. I think that my new test is going to have to be, I'm going to set a 2-minute shot clock within whatever the default photo editor is on this phone, where I can take the picture that this took and saying, just like anybody else would, saying, gee, I wish that were a little bit brighter, gee, I wish the colors were a little bit better, and then maybe then it would be more of a fair comparison. Because at this point, any good phone takes good enough pictures across the board that it comes down to, do you prefer lighter pictures over dark pictures? Do you prefer, quote, over sharpening over softer details? And so this is why, again, pixel peeping is just so soul crushing for anybody who wants to help somebody decide which is the better phone for them.
So the iPhone's going to get better, though, because Apple just bought a UK startup called Spectral Edge, designed to improve colors in smartphone photos. I don't know anything about...
I thought you were going to say it was going to get a Marquez mode. And I was saying, please don't. Every vendor, please do not go and boost the brightness and reduce the depth of
field. One of the things that's interesting about the technology that they're using, at least from what I've read about them, is that they're using infrared data to sharpen the image, so which does actually kind of make sense. So
the red profile is the one where contrast lives, right? It's mostly in the red.
Infrared?
Red.
Well, they're using infrared.
I know when I'm bumping contrast in Photoshop using levels, if I work in the red channel, I seem to get
they're actually taking infrared. So they're taking an infrared image.
It's just even more red, isn't it?
Isn't
infrared just super red?
So it
but no, it's invisible. I know
what it allows it. What it allows it to do, and you'll actually see a little bit of this in, if you look at the behind the scenes for The Irishman, the witness cameras on either side of the main camera are infrared. And so
those are the ones they're making the 3D models of the faces with.
They're not making the 3D models. They're tracking them.
Tracking them so they can make 3D models.
Right, because what happens is that they're not sensitive to light, because it's just the heat off of, you know, so what it means is it doesn't matter whether it's lit or unlit, it's still going to grab that information. So it's a really interesting way to go and grab detail and be able to use that as part of the detail calculation in the luminance. So the way that all of our detail, what we think of as sharp, is all generally living inside of the luminosity. So our black and the black and white information of the image, and then you just swash color over top of that. You paint color over it, and so using the infrared to help identify where those edges are and to pull those out
means that it's not being connected to the, and it's a very...
It's just more information. It's information you don't normally capture, right?
It is. It's added information. It's not connected to whether it's bright or dark, and it is... It theoretically
would be good
could
for
bring
low
a
light,
of,
particularly.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great for low light. I mean, it would be great for bringing
like the
out
predator?
Detail.
You see
light.
That predator view?
What?
Is that what you're getting at? Like, is the predator view from the movie where you bam, and then it's all like in different colors?
Yeah, exactly.
It's what a cat sees. So no, that's so it's just another. It's another area of the spectrum that is not normally captured by a camera.
And you'll get a sense of what it would look like if you.
Wouldn't
again,
they need
if,
sensors to do this, or they have a special infrared sensor?
You'd have to have. Well, the information's hitting. The sensor, it's a question
it's
of how
recorded.
The sensor... Yeah, because a lot of times we have coatings on those sensors to keep us from dealing with that data, right? I mean, usually when you want them to have an infrared camera, you send
you
it
take,
in and someone
actually,
strips
you take
the sensor.
The bear filter off, don't you, or something well,
they strip off the
UV filter.
Well, the UV is for the UV, but the infrared, either way, they have to change the way it's filtered.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, because it's not... It's a minor... Not a minor, but it's an inexpensive modification to take an existing DSLR and turn it... Into an infrared camera. I remember almost did that with my D70.
Or UV,
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm thinking of taking one of my cameras and sending it.
You get great, it's a great look. If you take pictures of green, it turns white, right? And so I had a friend who was a National Geographic photographer, did that to one of his cameras and took a picture at Arlington National Cemetery that was stark.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. So this is something we'll be looking for in maybe next year or the
2024.
Year 2024.
I'm just guessing.
Or maybe
just
they
like,
just hired
It's going to take years. It's going to take years for it to get it to show up somewhere.
Let's see. iOS 13.3 bug in communication limits. This is part of the new parental control feature. It was supposed to let you limit who your kid talks to. But apparently, kids can get around it.
Best laid plans.
Kids got around it?
Kids got around it. What a shock. CNBC says it doesn't work properly. There are several bugs, but it lets your kids talk to shocking strangers on the phone, FaceTime, or through text messages. So I'm sure Apple will fix that. Look for 13.3.1 any day now.
It just hit beta.
Did it just hit beta? All right.
Today,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm an Apple Arcade fan. I think it's worth $5 a month. That's $60 a year. But Apple has apparently added a new annual $50 subscription. So you can even save more if you
buy
it.
What would you pay
now? Huh?
What would you pay now?
Now how much would you
pay? Wait, there's more.
There's more. So
my kids love Apple Arcade.
Sorry, in Canada, it'll be $59.99 a year. In the UK.
It's the headwinds. It's the exchange headwinds, Leah.
Yeah. £49.99 £49.99
I think we're getting the best deal out of that, right?
It's like, we are. 2 free months of Apple Arcade for $50.
And think about the fact that, like, that's about the cost of one console game. And yes, I realize that console games are much more complicated, but it's, you know.
You get 100 games.
There's so many games.
Yeah.
Have you played the new one Apple's pushing like crazy, the celebrity soccer game? Which is weird because the celebrities are sports people from other sports. I don't get it.
Can you tackle in golf? I will pay them that $50 right now.
Tackling
if you can tackle
in, golf.
In golf.
It's called Ultimate Rivals. Licensed stars from the NHL, NBA, NFL, MLB, WNBA, and the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. And I don't know what sport they're playing, but...
I went to Hour of Code, and they had Snowman, the people who make Alto's Adventure and the card game.
Oh, I love Alto's Adventure, yeah.
They are so they were so happy with Apple Arcade, just letting them make these kinds of games.
Really? They're happy about it?
Yeah, it was like the card game was like 10 years in development. It was a young programmer had the idea in school and worked on with friends, eventually teamed up with Snowman to put it out, and it was unclear, I think, what kind of market it would have. But with an Apple Arcade, it's been phenomenal.
You know, given the licensing costs of getting Justin Turner and Wayne Gretzky, well, maybe Gretzky's cheap these days. He's retired. Alex Morgan,
he's a legend, sir.
He's a goat. He's a goat. Greatest of all time. But the licensing costs must be prohibitive. So that shows there's some money to be made in Apple Arcade.
When you're always looking at especially if you're doing some kind of niche that isn't a first person shooter or a big game, you know, that type of thing.
This is where Arcade is perfect. Yeah.
You just can't, you know, like for game companies, it's really hard to take the risk of the investment to go down that path when you don't know you know, how it's going to turn out. And then, of course, you come out with one game that does really well. I mean, you look at an example of my favorite game that of Field Runners. You know, they just weren't able to maintain it.
Right.
You know.
It's not a continued income.
Right. But as a game that you would just have on as part of your Apple Arcade, it would be great.
They're not playing soccer. I'm sorry. They're playing ice hockey. So you'll like that, Renee. Oh, yeah,
yes.
Yes.
I'm a fan of the ice hockey.
And it'll be followed by a basketball game. So this is The Rink, Ultimate Rivals The Rink, and in the spring, Ultimate Rivals The Court.
Is the Pogo phone going to win this too? I'll be so sad.
I just want a poker game or any sort of a gambling game where you get to go against like Michael Jordan or any of these other sports players who are terrible, terrible at gambling.
Apple News. Yeah. Why? You know, what does it matter? Let me win for once. Just let me win. What does it matter? You know, you got plenty of money, Michael. Just let me win.
You give each player you're playing against. You have the card shark. You have the whale. You have the, you got to put them in there. So they're all, you're playing different people and you have to, there's like a randomization. Well, because also beginners are really hard to play because you can't figure out what they're going to do
next.
That's
true. That's true.
I can't. I have a hard time.
Style. I don't know if Michael Jordan has a gambling addiction. I hope he does not. I don't mean to offend that way, but I want to play against people who have more money than God and don't care. Are not nearly as good as they think they are, and don't care if they lose like $120,000 on one hand.
No big.
And are willing to extend me the level of credit where I can match.
Live coverage coming to Apple News. They've done a deal with ABC News to provide live video coverage of the 2020 presidential election and future primary and general debates.
I think this is a horrible idea. I think they should just stay away from this election as far as they possibly can.
Well, there will be people. It's blocking. All right. Brave doesn't want me to go to that site, but. This is
radioactive.
It's radioactive.
I mean, there's so many. It's so, people are so upset about everything on both sides.
Just don't put it in Apple News. It's just too divisive.
These things just stay out of this mess.
Well, if you're gonna do news, you gotta do news. You can't not cover the presidential election.
You keep on covering it. You just keep on putting up the articles that you have there.
You don't have to put video.
If you're gonna
in there.
Stick out and do something first. This is not the place.
I think it's an interesting point though, because they had to this. Point, they don't have any video in news, right? It's just text. I mean, there might be embedded videos in an article,
right?
But this is I guess like articles, but except it won't be articles, it'll be ABC news.
Wouldn't you start with a softer market like the New Zealand elections or the Canadian elections and then work your way up?
Apple did not describe its deal with ABC as exclusive and declined to comment on whether it's going to get other news organizations involved, so this may be the beginning of
I mean, the good news is, I mean, I'm sure that I picked ABC because they're probably closest to the center that you'd find.
Also Disney.
People, you know what? The hottest category in podcasts right now is political news podcasts. That's a very hot category. I've also heard some people say you may be tired of it.
I don't even see it. I'm not tired of it. I have a filter in Twitter that just eliminates it. Right. Like, so if you wonder why I don't
Ant was
usually,
saying the same thing. He blocks anything I've with got the word like, impeach. He doesn't want to hear it.
I've got like 50, 60 terms that if you put those in your thing, and it's funny because I'll see replies to things and it'll say this blocked. But normally in my feed, I don't see any of it, which makes Twitter a lot more fun.
Maybe you've seen this too, Leo. I don't know. But there used to be like we had a lot of people who would just sit on technology news and technology blogs and technology everything all day. And a huge part of that audience is now splitting attention with politics,
Absolutely.
Which never used to be the case. Like Absolutely. The BlackBerry forums would be bussing. And now we've lost a whole ton of attention to politics.
Yep. That's going to end maybe sooner than later. but at some point.
Come back. We want you.
And you know what? It's actually a testament to Donald Trump's real skill at media. Right. He, for whatever else you might say about him, he's very good at getting people to, pay attention.
I can tell you that broadcasters are already worried financially.
Somebody else gets elected. You're not going to get.
No, they are literally worried financially about what happens in 2021 right. because they're making so
Trump
much money.
Is so good for them.
And they've built up so much of an infrastructure just to support covering him. I mean, you know, that
it's the
that
same thing for the
about,
Daily
like,
on
do?
The New York Times Daily, NPR's First Up. All of these shows benefit because Trump is president.
Oh, yeah,
and
so
frankly, that's what happened during the election
because he tweets.
Right.
Like, yeah. I've even gone to studios and been all mic'd up and ready to go. And they go, oh, sorry. The president tweeted.
Yep.
Like, over and over again.
He is really good at that. At Thanksgiving, I wanted to buy Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. And it was like $20. It was expensive. Good news. Actually, it was $10. It was $20. Charlie Brown Christmas, $10. Apple's having a sale. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, $10. A Very Muppet Christmas, $10. Christmas with the Crank, $8. I don't know if the price tells you something. The Night Before, $8. Arthur Christmas, $8. Big sale. Santa Who down to $10. Okay, there are other good deals on other movies, that's the big one.
You need that special. Sorry. You just need it.
Do I need Charlie Brown Christmas? True. Should I own it?
You need it.
Get it.
It's the Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown, or is that a different one?
The Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown is the one that comes out at Halloween. And then there's Thanksgiving. It's Thanksgiving Charlie Brown.
You could spend $60 getting all three.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to get the ones from like years and years and years and later when there is an Arbor Day special. Is there really? Your first. Oh yeah, it's your first Kiss Charlie Brown. But I'm saying that they're for the Christmas special and the Thanksgiving special too. You want to have it standing by for when you suddenly have this over-encompassing ache to watch the Charlie Brown Christmas special. It's going to happen sometime in December. Just like at some point you're going to want to see the Santa Claus Conquers the Martians episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000. You never know when it's going to hit you. You want to have it standing by for that. You don't have to order something. You don't even have to go through a purchase sort of thing. You just want to pick up the remote and say, Charles Schulz, Bill Melendez, please cure this ache in my heart.
Yes. I just want the piano. Bill Melendez, here's a little bit. Yes. Just to make you feel good.
Bill Melendez is the
animator. Turn my sound. Is my sound on?
We're not going to play that.
Oh.
Sorry. Maybe Laurie could do a punk version for us.
Am I going to get us in trouble?
You think we'll get taken down?
Yeah. Please sing it. We will not get taken down if you sing it.
I just want to play the trailer from Apple's own site.
For the Charlie Brown Christmas special.
This is the chilling effect that this illegal copyright restrictions perpetrated by YouTube and Apple. They're illegal. That's fair use. We're talking about it as a news thing. And the chilling effect is we can't even show it. Which is ridiculous.
There was a brilliant video, Leo. What this guy did was he made his own terrible outro for every one of his videos, and he put it at the end of it, and then he signed up for CD Baby. So anytime any of his stuff got claimed, he would claim it for his end song as well.
Ugh. Ugh.
And then he shared the claim on any of his own videos.
Monopolies aren't bad if they're not abused. This is Tim Cook.
That's the
that
first
was a
time
really good segue
Steve
right Dowling. There.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't abuse it, Tim. Don't abuse that monopoly, Tim. He's looking at me right now. You know that. Don't play it. Don't play it, Leo. Don't.
Press that button. I dare you, Laporte.
Tim Cook has defended the existence of monopolies in a business because it's not bad as long as you don't abuse it. This was in an interview with the Nikkei Asian Review on Wednesday. He said, we're not a monopoly, but if we were, it wouldn't be bad.
Don't you think this is the first time we've missed Steve Dowling being in that room? Because I don't think that would have been the headline if Dowling had still been there.
We are not a monopoly. If we were, Leo wouldn't play that song.
What Steve means is he's not playing the monopoly game because, you know, he doesn't like to play the boot.
Yeah. Apple has more job openings now than ever. Look at that. Why is that?
They're going to need another
donor. They're hiring. There are 5,280 jobs listed on the Apple career site, up from a seasonal low of 3,900 last April, and 530 more openings than this time last year.
It's those AirPods,
yeah, man.
Exactly. More AirPods.
They're hiring more software and services professionals than in hardware. All right. So go get a job at the campus. Go get a job. That's from Think Numb. And when you do get a job at the campus, you'll get free genetic testing. What could possibly go wrong?
They're looking for mutants. Don't fall for it.
This is through AC Wellness. Apple employees can get free genetic screenings for diseases from their on-site health clinics thanks to a pilot partnership with Color Genomics.
I read this article this morning. I think it was ABC, and it was this very sort of dystopian future by, all of our allowing technology into our lives through video cameras and things like that. And it was kind of like it was kind of reminding us as humans that maybe we shouldn't give over everything about ourselves to corporations. This idea that 1984 was that the government comes in and like takes all of your life from you and your personality from you. And this argument is basically saying we're actually just kind of giving it to everyone right now. We're giving it to corporations right now, who in turn in our future could then give it to government. And when I saw this genetic testing article, that kind of it added to that in this very weird way of like that's how the future happens, is where we let governments into, the Ring is a perfect example of it's owned by a company who uses it to help us so that we can protect ourselves from predators that might come to our front door. But it also shares that information with the police. And that's the starting point, right? So right now it's fine. It starts with the police. And then the next thing you know, we have cameras inside of our houses that the government is watching us. And then, Apple lets us offers genetic testing so that we can find out about our past and our history. But then, the government then eventually gets that information and starts like weeding out who's allowed to have jobs. Like, it's a little bit scary. And I'm not usually that kind of a
You would never do this. You're afraid that information would be used against you, like in Gattaca.
A little bit. I haven't done it because I actually was given that as a gift one year for Christmas, and I never
genetic information is sprayed all over the internet.
Is it mostly Taryn?
I did 23andMe, which was a sponsor, and then another one which was a sponsor. I can't remember the name of it, and I don't mind.
So Leah won't do it for free, but he will do it for money.
Spit samples. No, I did 23andMe before they were a sponsor. Spit samples, they got it. It's in the storage locker somewhere. I don't know. What are you going to do?
I still think one of the interesting things. Oh, go ahead, Renee.
No, I was just making a bad joke.
Hulk Hogan joke?
I just think
Vulcan. Were you at all Vulcan?
My blood has a greenish tinge.
I think that the interesting thing, though, is I do think that there is this... combining biometrics with our DNA that is going to be really powerful. Now, if it's anonymized, hopefully, is where we want to
have
that data.
Yeah, I do all the Apple health research things on the iPhone.
But if you match that to your DNA, there's going to be a point where Apple knows, there's things that we see that is going to affect you in a year or 2 years that you could change now.
Right.
Because we understand that
Right.
I remember I was talking to a geneticist at a dinner or whatever, and they were talking about eventually being able to make drugs. All those side effects are because of your DNA
background.
The
best cancer drugs are tuned to the DNA of the cancer.
But he said it'll get down to like you have a headache and we just know which one to give you because of your genetic background.
I think that's going to be in the next few decades.
Right. And so
insurance companies are going to use it against us
the hell
moment we're born because of what happens
we
gotta, to our great-great-grandparents.
They're already using it all.
Designer babies. Think of the designer babies.
The insurance company, by the way, asks you all these questions. And if you lie, then they have a good reason not to give you insurance. So they know it anyway.
They're not wholesome. They're looking for reasons not to pay out.
Exactly.
And so they're going to try to they know that if they issue a challenge, that's at least 6 to 8 months of an arbitration, which they don't have to actually pay out.
But
and maybe you'll give up.
The solution
and
to that is not to stop genetic research, but to get rid of insurance companies.
I don't think anybody's suggesting we stop genetic research, but I do believe that they should be better controlled. And that's one of the reasons why Apple has to do this through a separate company. They can't, in California at least, I don't know if that's nationwide, they're prohibited, a company's prohibited from collecting genetic information from their employees, specifically because of the abuse that can happen. But the dimension that I want to add to this is that you always have to be prepared for, again, I'm not anti-government. I fear the cops. I fear this. I'm saying that there's a reason why there are limits to the power of government and police and law enforcement. It's because abuse is a really, really big problem. So when you start off with a situation that people are putting cameras in their homes just to protect their property, or at least to be able to see if there's a theft, that maybe catch the person. That's logical. And then you have the point. You abstract it to one level in which, well, now this data is out there somewhere. And if you are in law enforcement and it is your job to keep a community safe, and you know there is footage out there on a server of this data that could help you solve a problem and solve a crime, you're going to try to go and get after it. This is the exact problem that every tech company is facing. The hearings that were taking place last week with Apple and other companies being grilled over encryption on phones. It's not that you couldn't pass a law requiring people to make sure that all of your messaging, all of your data, all your contacts, all of your map information is stored in a central location where the government can get at it. That would never fly. But our government is, to the Democratic and Republican senators on both sides of the aisle, are insisting that the fact that this data exists on this device means that we should be able to get at it to solve problems that we want to solve. It's not that it's up to us to not collect this apparently to begin with, because eventually someone is going to say, so long as there is a key to unlock a problem that we feel that we need to unlock, it is your responsibility to make sure that the government and our law enforcement can get access to that key. That's one of the problems of having lots of genetic information being recorded out there, because, well, look, if there is a database somewhere, and I don't care if it's a private database, if we can just simply match this DNA sample against not just all the people who participated and volunteered to participate in this test or paid to participate in this test, but everybody related to these people, well, what is your argument against helping us to solve these horrible, brutal crimes? Are you that much of a madman? Are you that much of a cruel person? You don't want this murder to be solved and for the relatives to get some closure? And that's the real difficulty. And that's the thing we have to make sure we put the brakes on from the very beginning. It's defending a fundamental human right, a personal right as a free citizen of a hopefully free country.
So it's time for our picks of the week. Andy and Akko, you start. Why don't you?
I'm going to start with we're talking about nostalgia, and it reminded me that on archive.org and other places, but archive.org is a great place. They actually have built-in web-based HyperCard emulators and Mac emulators. So if you want to like play Inigo Gets Out for the first time since you were a teenager or a kid, you can just go to archive.org, click on this link, and it has to run. It's wonderful because it has to run a full like classic Macintosh emulator through your web browser. So you will see like the flashing like question. You will see the black and white classic Mac screen, a flashing disk cursor, which will then turn into a Happy Mac that will then turn into a Finder desktop with two floppies on it. You have to double click on the disk and run the stack. And then you are running Inigo Gets Out probably just as fast as on your classic Mac. And it's almost certainly because the web browser is slowing it down to make sure that it doesn't sound insane. But yeah, there are all kinds of other like online games, all kinds of other classic Mac games and apps that you can run through emulators.
This is my favorite, Dark Castle. I just
yeah.
Yep. Do they have Aztec?
I don't know. Let me see how.
But yeah, it is such a trip. It's like when
sound on that.
When your parents like say, hey, look, we can't get our cars in the garage and the basement. We can't get things in the basement. Like everybody, all you kids, you're going to come over and you're going to basically help clean us out. And then you find this box that you scrolled away there like before you went to college and it's been untouched. And suddenly you have like the notebook of really bad poetry you wrote. You suddenly have like your Trapper Keeper with all the stickers and stuff on it.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Isn't this the best game ever?
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Man, I love Dark Castle. I wish I could figure out the controls. Oh, there we go. Oh, this is pretty much how I played it even when I had a man.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of death. See, this is what desensitized us kids to death and violence. Getting killed in the first 2 seconds of every game. Yeah.
Let's go back. And I was playing beginner mode. Let's go back to the beginner. I want to hear the...
Let's see. Is there any sound? I guess there's no music. It's amazing, isn't it, that they've got... There we go. This is the yep, level. Yep. Yeah. Oh, those bats, they get me every time.
Oh.
Thank you, Andy, for reminding us. The entire archive is here. It's really incredible.
So that's your Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday kind of shot.
Yeah. Have you, by the way, have you visited the Internet Archive?
Oh, I love it. Oh, they want money. They're going broke.
Well, they're looking for donations, and you should donate because
it looks just like that building. They bought this.
Oh, you mean they have a building that looks like
there's a building, the Internet Archive in San Francisco. It's just south of the Golden.
There's the building right there.
Yeah, it actually is an old Christian Science
temple
or whatever, and it's massive.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I think this is the best thing you should. Give money to the Wayback Machine, folks. This is the best thing ever. We don't want to lose our history, our heritage, or Dark Castle. Alex, you have a pick?
I do. This one is simple, but effective. This is a... I travel a lot, and when you're traveling, you want to throw your map up. You know, you want to put your phone up on your car.
Yeah.
And I just need something that I can put in that'll work with any car that I might rent. If I'm renting a car or my car or whatever, and I just stick it on, and then I can just slap my phone onto it, so I'm not hooking it up or trying to push it between things. And so this is a SCAT. I think it's called SCAT. They make a couple of them, but this one seems to be the best one I've had. I went through a couple of them, and this isn't the one I'm happy with. The SCAT magnetic. I don't know if you guys have used any of these magnetic holders, but it's a magnetic holder. It fits onto your vent. You just push it. It just scissors right onto the vent. And I've been using it for like a year now. So.
Then you have to put a metal plate on your phone, though.
I don't think you do. I think you can hook it. I think your phone will just snap.
It's magnetic enough.
It's very magnetic. Now I use. I have to. Now I
because I have I one of these, but I had to put a metal plate on the iPad, and you have to put that metal plate on it. That kills wireless charging, which is really annoying.
Oh, see, I don't care about wireless charging. I hate wireless charging. I don't even like wireless charging on my watch. I have this Vena case, so it's metal.
It does not wireless charge you.
Well, this is metal on the back.
Yeah,
that's a wallet.
On. Yeah.
And so I just love the fact that I just go snap, it snaps on, and there's not a lot of fiddling about and messing with it. So,
do you use heater in the wintertime so that the heat blows out of those vents? And then if so, have you noticed in
I do use heat, and I haven't had any trouble at all. Okay. We don't have really winter here. It's kind of like somewhat cold or chilly, as you know. So at least where I live, it gets a little chilly, but that's about it.
He's used to Pittsburgh weather, so he doesn't need a heater in his car.
Exactly.
he wears
usually,
a sweater.
Usually, if I have heat, I will admit that it's usually defrost. You know, is kind of my version of heater. And the reason mostly is because I have this old BMW that has a little thing that I have to scroll up and down to get hot or cold air out of my vents, you know, because it'll always be warm or always be cold based on it, no matter what temperature you set to the, which is kind of cool.
Do
but
you also have a switch for the reserve tank on the floor?
Is it that old? I wish it did. Yeah, that would be awesome. No, it's not that old.
I'll just show you what I use because I kept seeing the ads on the NFL for WeatherTech. They make a cup phone holder goes into your cup holder. And they have a different sizes, and they put it in there. The only That's thing cute. I'll say, I have this, and I bought the extension as well for it. The only thing bad about it, it's a little rattly. And maybe my cup holder is just not exactly the right size. Mm-hmm. You see, you have different sizes. And I kind of like that.
I think that would impinge on my Starbucks habit.
I got to say, I hate the fact that you have to look down at your floorboard to see your screen. I'll say the one of the biggest, best and cheapest luxuries that I have ever purchased in my life was having like a real phone mount hard installed in my dashboard.
You can do
in
that
exactly the place. Oh yeah, no, it's not that difficult. As a matter of fact, what they often do is they pop out they don't have to take apart your dashboard. They actually will pop out a vent which is designed to pull out, and then you can get access to like the roof of that dash panel or the front face. And when you get to decide that I want my phone to be at eye level, the exact same level as my rearview mirrors. I want it to be right here to the left of my my steering wheel, and it's not going to rattle. It's not going to bump off. I'm not going to accidentally knock it off when I'm going from place to place. And it's just it feels like the most luxurious thing ever. This is not a half arsed solution. This is not a make do with here's the best we can do by plugging
next
something
best
into
thing
something
would be
that
have CarPlay. If you had CarPlay, that would be.
I hate CarPlay.
My next
my wife has
my
CarPlay.
Next car is the I'm gonna get that Mustang Mach-E, the electric Ford at the end of the year, and that has wireless CarPlay and a Qi charger. So you just put your phone on the Qi pad, and it sits there, and it's already doing CarPlay.
I think
you don't like it. Why don't you like CarPlay?
I'm used to everything I can do with my. I'm used to being able to search. You know,
no,
like,
you got
to
drive, dude. You can't be messing around with your phone.
When I'm in the passenger seat, I don't. I'm in the passenger seat with my wife's car. I want to find a song. I can't do that on CarPlay. Like it's just like you can use the playlists, but you can't go search for a song. I'm not the driver. I'm in the passenger seat trying to find a song that I can't do that.
And Burke says, "Don't get that WeatherTech. You need the RAM mount, stubby drink cup base with X grip in black."
Holy smokes!
Yes, that was I'm telling you, the RAM mount stuff. That's what I went with when I had it hard installed. It's a system that you can buy all kinds of different holders and extensions, and this is the thing that. It works. Oh, yep. No, yeah, they have iPad holders. They have laptop holders. They design things for cop cars. They design things for anytime you want to install anything in a car that involves an electronic device. They won't give you, we managed to sort of accommodate this. They will give that X grip that they're showing right now is perfect. They're like four fingers that are sort of like spring loaded against each other. So they will simply grip.
iPhone not slip though, Andy? Because when there's no bottom, mine just keeps slipping.
Well, you can make it be a bottom, can't you? Like, just put that in
you underneath. Can. I'm telling you, it grips hard enough to not damage anything that's going on inside the phone.
It's shown
but
here
it's
is,
but it's yeah. very 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 tight springs. It actually takes a little bit of force for you to spring them open. But when they close around it, and you can easily take it out again. The great thing about it is it's a system. So when I switched cars, I was able to use like 75%, or when I switched phones, I was able to like keep 75-80% of the system. And buy the different sort of head that I needed for my new much bigger phone. When I decided that when I was doing sort of a road trip with somebody and I wanted an iPad mini holder for the passenger side, again, I was able to because at this point I have like a box of different RAM mounts. Parts and gizmos. All I had to do was like maybe buy one arm extension, and then I could sort of build out of Legos exactly the sort of mounting system I needed for this thing. Can't recommend them highly enough. They don't cost that much more than what you get like off of a Sharper Image, like fake Chinese brand sort of thing. But dang it, these things last, and they're so versatile.
And he's costing me money.
Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
I was gonna go with an ant. No, I'm just kidding. A couple things. One, just for people, we were mentioning my lights in the beginning of the episode, so I just wanted to put the link in with the picks of the week. It's their digital Sputnik Voyager, and they probably cost an Alex per light. But what they do that a lot of lights can't do is they're not even just LED, but they're like screens. You can program them to have different colors in different areas. And again, I heard about them on The Mandalorian, so I had to have them. And there's an app, and you can take photographs, and they will like try to match the colors in the photograph. And you can make them into like police lights and chase lights and highway lights going over you. They're just infinitely programmable. So those are digital Sputnik Voyager. But the thing I wanted to talk about also was snowflake weather, and it's particularly apt for people in the great country of Australia who are losing the fabulous Pocket Weather, an app that I was never allowed to use because I believe the developer Russell is just anti-Canadian. But that's my pet theory. But yeah, so this is a new weather app. Full disclosure, it's by a friend of mine, Mark Edwards of Bejango. I keep calling it Biango, but it's really Bejango. They make the wonderful iStat menu.
I love iStat.
I just got the Snowflake Weather. It is so awesome.
So iStat Weather, ISAT menu has weather in it. Is this like
he's gone all in, and he is a designer's designer. Like, he is the person who makes all the Photoshop and everything for other interface designers. So it is just as well thought out and particular and opinionated in the best possible sense of the way that you can imagine. And if for Australians, it will replace pocket weather, if that's what you want to do. But for everybody else, it just brings a terrific weather apps are like a playground. They're like Twitter apps of 10 years ago. They're just a place where some of the best developers and designers truly experiment with interface and data. And they take these what could be boring just data dumps and make them visually pleasing. And there's graphs and there's graphics and there's all these things. And it seems like there's limitless really good takes. But this Snowflake Weather is just one of my favorite in quite a while.
Nice. Snowflake Weather. I've decided I need access to my iPad all the time now. So I have the RAM mount, microphone mount.
Love that.
Mm.
That's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That thing is beefy.
I couldn't get the iPad in it.
I might have pulled a rotator cuff there when I grabbed on it.
Get it in there. It's like made out of metal.
Yeah.
Let me take that off so you can see me. My pick, actually, I ordered some time ago, and it finally is here. In fact, we're going to do an unboxing of, I think, from Peak Design. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the travel tripod.
Yay.
It's finally here. This is Peak's way of making a compact, packable tripod. I got the fancy one, the carbon fiber, so it would be lighter, stronger. And more thievable.
I think that's the one I ordered too.
So I'm, you know, as usual
with
Kickstarter.
What's the length on the box?
I forgot to. I don't know why. You just got to fit.
It's a certain. So
it's just the
it
right
needs
size.
To be shorter than 18 inches. It looks like it might be.
It is. It actually says on here. I don't know. I'll open it up and you can measure.
Yeah, it looks like it's 15.
Yeah, yeah. And this is so it comes to this case, which I didn't even know about, which is quite nice.
And it really can be less than 21 inches, and you can get away with it.
And then here is, go ahead, show, whoa, this is heavier than that RAM thing.
Oh, that'll totally fit into a carry-on.
Yeah, this is nice. So the idea is you can take a full-size tripod along with you. Now, this is the expensive one, which means it's almost $500.
Cabin fiber.
But a good tripod costs that much.
I just want to know if I can fit a floating head onto it somehow.
Wow. 600
I'm sure someone will come up with that.
Yeah, it does not have a floating head, but it does have a head of some kind. And it looks like it's got a lock on it. They said it would fit. Yeah, it does. It has the standard.
How do you level it? Is the curious thing here. Hold on.
It has a
it levels itself.
It has what I think is really important on every tripod, a hook.
Yeah.
So you can put your sandbag or your camera back. And then, of course, I just opened my
jacket.
Look at that. That's
and doesn't the hook pull out and turn into like an iPhone tripod mount?
Oh, does it? Oh, so there's a lot of features on this that I don't know.
It's like Batman's tripod, Leo.
It is a Batman.
The impression I got, and I love this about, it, is that it seemed like a really really talented photographer's version of the Homer Mobile. So you know what? I want cup holders here, 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 and here. I want a separate bubble to the kids for the back, so I don't have to hear them. It's like every single thing.
I'll let Alex, Alex, who knows
every single thing that annoyed people about tripods.
I'll let you mess with that. But anyway,
small ones.
They're out now. It was a Kickstarter. I'm glad it came in time for Christmas. It's my Christmas present to myself. The Peak Travel.
You deserve it, Leo.
Tripod. I like Peak stuff. I have Peak stuff all over.
They're so good.
My camera.
You look at the new bags yet?
No, they've announced new bags that are supposedly even better than their formerly great bags.
So it's got a little ball mount.
It does have a ball mount. All right.
For leveling?
It's not. For leveling. Yeah, yeah.
No, it's great. I mean, that's great.
And it has. So, does it have a little.
It's got a little bubble.
Bubble? Yeah. So there you go. So you can actually. That's actually the way to do it. My Gitzo has a bubble, but it's on the pole that you rotate with, and if the camera's set wrong, it won't matter. So
I'm waiting for somebody to do a digital bubble that ties to my iPhone so I can look at my iPhone. You should be surprised how often I would use that because there's always this thing. The problem is if you put your camera on it, and then you can't see the bubble.
Yeah.
And so being able to have something to talk to it would be amazing. I'm just saying.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have concluded this. Wait a minute. No, we haven't. Lori Gill, your pick of the week.
Well, I mean, how can I follow your unboxing?
Well, I meant to do that last. I apologize. I forgot. Oh, sorry.
Oh, so it's okay. Mine is actually pretty cool, too. It's not as cool as that titanium travel tripod. But for anybody who likes Studio Ghibli films, they are now available on iTunes, I believe, for the first time ever. And my favorite of the Studio Ghibli films is Spirited Away by Hayao Miyazaki.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, I know $20 seems like a lot, especially if you've never seen it before. So find a way somewhere to rent it or wait a little longer because it's probably going to be available to rent at some point on iTunes. It might even show up on Disney Plus. I don't know, because that a lot of Miyazaki films, a lot of the Studio Ghibli films are also, they're like Disney combined. So maybe it'll show up on Disney Plus. But if you love any of these films and you've always wanted a digital version of them, a bunch of the Studio Ghibli films are now available on iTunes.
I hear a little voice. What, Karsten?
When HBO Max launches, it will be on HBO Max. Not
there you go. So that's a place you can watch it if you've never seen it before.
Buy it. $20. It'll probably be better quality anyway, right? 4K and all that. Look, there is a little, you're right, there's a little iPhone
amazing
grip in there.
You put this thing and they put this thing in the center.
That's what I love about certain design.
Peak, you have to actually watch a video to understand how to use this thing. So I'll be watching that video. Yeah.
No, there's a sort of like we designed this thing to have a hollow tube in there just for structural reasons, but gee, that's some space that we could actually take advantage of. What could we do with it? It's sort of like when you have a Swiss Army knife that's been in your pocket for 10 years, and then suddenly, like, you for some reason you're looking at it from an odd angle, and then you flip out the corkscrew and realize there has been like an inch and a half, 2 inch like straight common pin like hidden behind it ever since that you've never ever known about. It's like, my God, they realized that at some point someone might need like a sharp pin, and they said, "What the hell? We'll put it in there." That's great.
There's something about pulling this little guy out that's so James Bond.
Just don't break like it. It's like, expensive.
I feel like it's cute.
I shouldn't have given it to Alex.
It's like that extra handgun in your sock. Like, they didn't frisk me good enough.
Shouldn't have given it to Alex. It's never coming back in one piece, I can tell right now.
He's already converted into rapid fire.
I know. That's the problem. Don't put a bump stock on it, please. That concludes our show for the day. Thank you, Renee Ritchie. imore.com/vector. Renee is constantly producing videos. All sorts of great stuff. Anything you want to plug that's coming up soon?
I did one I really liked yesterday. It took me forever to do it, but I took all the footage I could find from Apple from the last 10 years, the good stuff, the products, the controversies, the humans, the education, the accessibility, the silicon, the environment, all of that. And I made I tried to do 10 years in 10 minutes. I went just slightly over, but I got almost everything from Steve Jobs and the original iPad to the Mac Pro and new 6-inch MacBook Pro in about 10 minutes.
Nice.
I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Nice.
It's really good.
I have to watch. imore.com/vector. Lori Gill, managing editor at imore. What's coming up for you?
I got nothing.
You took the holidays off?
Christmas break. Yeah.
So are we. Well, sort of. No, actually, we're going to be back. And you guys all know we're doing the show Monday next week because Tuesday's Christmas Eve. I couldn't make you do that. So all of our Tuesday shows are shifting over to Monday for next week.
I was kind of counting on that gold-plated excuse to avoid going to the extended family holiday. Is it okay if I still tell people that it's on Friday? It's on Tuesday? Okay.
Yeah, we'll release it Tuesday. They'll never know the difference. Andy and Anako, when will you be on GBH?
I was actually moved from Friday to Monday this week, so I was on yesterday, but that's still available on streaming at WGBHnews.org. I've got next week off because of the holiday, but I'll be on the week after that on Friday, on January 3rd, I think.
Nice. Alex Lindsay, what's coming up for you?
I'm working on stuff.
At Alex Lindsay on the Twitter if you want to know.
I did post, so you said I should take pictures of, I will post some pictures of my little home studio that I'm working on.
I'd love to see that.
Right now it's a little bit of a disaster because I'm still figuring it out. But I did post at your behest, I post the wiring diagram for the studio, which I've never done. I've never posted a wire diagram in public. So we build these for pretty much everything, like every kit, every whatever. I build them in OmniGraffle. And so before I start wiring, this is how I think about it.
Wow.
And you sit there and go, well, should I do this or should this cable connect to that? And
And so so I sit there and kind of think through it, and I talked a little
smart, bit. Because you have a diagram of the patching.
Well, and what makes it easier
I should have done this with my home stereo.
What happens is that you think through it, and you go, oh, you start grouping things the way you want to group them in the router. So that, like, there's things that are in fours. And anyway, I explain a little bit on Twitter. There's a thread there where I kind of talk about why I did what I did there. And what it allows me to do is, again, think through it. And then when I'm building it, I can listen to music and just kind of go,
you're the only guy I know who has a Blackmagic 40-port video hub in his house.
And how can you live without it? I mean, that's not living.
Like an animal.
Out of 40 by 40. I mean, you got to have 40 by 40 in there. It's,
and four Skype machines.
No, no, not four Skype machines. That's just one. That's the talk show. The four with four
with one machine. So you got four different Skype machines in one.
Exactly. But that way you can talk.
Why
to
buy four computers when you could buy one that's more than four times as expensive?
But way easier to manage.
Thank you, Alex. Yep. Did I get everybody? All right. Again, Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC. This next coming week only because of Christmas. We're going to do it the day before Christmas Eve. So if you want to watch live, twit.tv/live. Normally we're on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific. Twit.tv/live has audio and video streams. You can also join the chat room if you're watching live. It's always great to chat live at irc.twit.tv. For those of you who have a life, you can always get the on-demand version at twit.tv/mbw or at YouTube. Or if you subscribe, you'll make sure you never miss an episode because it'll automatically download to your favorite podcast application. If you're not watching in real time, you might want to still join a community. We have a great forum now that kind of duplicates what IRC does in real time asynchronously at twit.community, and you're more than welcome to join us there. I think it's a lot of fun. All the shows are represented, many of the hosts. It's a great place to not just talk about the shows, but anything that's on your mind. There's conversations about pretty much everything. Twit.community. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because break time is over. See ya.